Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Allie Irving for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah Daily. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. The first article, Do You Need a Financial Therapist? No matter how much money you have, your perception of your financial standing can be distorted. This kind of professional can help. This article was written by Alexis Berger and first published April 6, 2026. On a show where affluence is as pervasive as oxygen, you'd think self-proclaimed money queen Amanda Francis would fit right in with the ladies of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. A financial empowerment influencer, Francis frequently touts her wealth and fiscal know-how on camera. But don't ask her to help manage your accounts. Rather, Frances focuses on the mindset part, as she puts it. I think the foundation of financial success is our relationship with money, which involves the psychological, the emotional, and the energetic, she shared in a confessional interview. Throughout the latest season, Frances elicits countless eye rolls from her castmates about her chosen profession. But for all her woo-woo jargon, tacky humble brags, and pricey virtual courses, the controversial influencer is tapping into a valid idea, that your beliefs about your financial situation influence not just how you spend, save, and plan for the future, but also your mood, self-worth, and confidence. Often, those beliefs don't mesh with reality. People can feel like they are doing really well when on paper things do not look so great, says financial psychologist Sonia Lutter, Ph.D., LMFT, the director of the Financial Health and Wellness Program at Texas Tech University. Conversely, you see people who are really well off, and they think that they are going to be broke tomorrow. Addressing this disconnect often requires a special kind of expert. Enter financial therapists, who are trained to help people recalibrate their emotional relationship with money. The goal? To help people feel more empowered around their finances, better equipped to manage money responsibly, and improve their sense of self in the process. Here's how to know if you need one. What is financial therapy? Unlike wealth managers or financial advisors who deal directly with your accounts and investments, financial therapists specialize in the emotional side of money. Financial therapy is a specialized field that seeks to understand how people think, feel, behave, and understand their relationship with money, says financial therapist Aja Evans, a mental health counselor and author of Feel Good Finance. To get at the heart of that relationship, a financial therapist is really focusing on what happened throughout your life, says Rakim Sabri, a financial trauma expert and author of Overcoming Financial Trauma. What happened in your childhood? What did you observe? What are the narratives that you are carrying related to money? Maybe you grew up seeing your parents struggle to pay bills or blow your college fund on a risky investment. Now, as an adult, you might compulsively scrimp and save or get stressed out over the prospect of split checks at a dinner. Whatever your current mindset, it stands to reason that your past experiences have colored how you operate in the world. A financial therapist can help you notice and address such patterns. Who becomes a financial therapist is a bit of a mixed bag. Professionals come to financial therapy from a variety of places, says Sabri. Unlike traditional mental health therapists, who typically go to graduate school for psychology or social work and take licensing exams in order to practice in their state, financial therapists don't have a specific educational pathway. This makes it a tad bit challenging to find a good one. More on that in a bit. Some financial therapists, like Luder, may come from psychotherapy-related fields, while others, like Sabri, may come from the financial services field, but all qualified financial therapists are equipped to discuss the psychological factors that contribute to how a person engages with money. Sure, you can bring these problems to your regular therapist, but keep in mind that they may not specialize in financial issues, and thus you might not get the best support, kind of like a primary care doc doesn't always know about the latest menopause treatment. In fact, Luter says she co-founded the Financial Therapy Association, more on this later, in 2009 after noticing that many of her fellow mental health providers struggled to help patients navigate financial issues, and traditional financial experts weren't knowledgeable enough to help clients handle the emotional challenges related to money. A financial therapist can help bridge that gap. Do you need financial therapy? In general, if you find that your thoughts and feelings about money are interrupting your life, it might be time to see a financial therapist, Evans says. Here are a few common situations that can really benefit from this form of support. You and your partner always fight over money. Some research suggests that financial issues cause 40% of disagreements for long-standing couples. Sabree says conflict often stems from having different approaches to navigating money. Say, one person likes to save aggressively for the future, while the other values spending on once-in-a-lifetime trips. Financial therapists work with couples to maybe not get them on the same page, but get them closer to the same page so that there's more harmony in terms of what the household finances look like, he says. Your extended family has money issues. Finances can also impact family relationships, particularly when it comes to setting up wills, trusts, or other types of estate planning. When we think about the inevitable transition into death and what asset reallocation or distribution looks like, that can be a difficult conversation to have, Sabree says. Parsing your feelings first with a financial therapist can help you plot how you'd like to approach the issue with your loved one in a way that will protect your boundaries and finances while preserving the relationship. Or you can bring everyone together for a session to hash things out with the help of a neutral party. You've experienced financial trauma. Financial trauma describes the extreme emotional and psychological stress that can happen when your financial security is threatened. Examples can include growing up in poverty or having a former partner hide money from you or rack up tons of debt in your name, says Luter. These traumatic experiences can make a person extremely anxious about the state of their finances, obsessed with living frugally, or even avoid paying bills or looking at their bank account. A financial therapist can help you get to the heart of these issues, identify triggers, and figure out coping mechanisms. You struggle with extreme money behaviors. Gambling addiction, financial hoarding, and compulsive spending are common issues people navigate in financial therapy, says Sabree. In these cases, the therapist may be able to help the person identify patterns and instill new, healthier ones as part of the healing process. How to find a qualified financial therapist? Ready to explore financial therapy? Consider the source, no Instagram influencers, please, and their credentials. Luter recommends looking for a provider who has certifications from external sources that require education and govern under a level of oversight. One example is the Financial Therapy Association, FTA, which offers the credential of Certified Financial Therapist, CFT, to candidates who come from both mental health and financial services backgrounds. There's also the Institute for Systemic Financial Professionals, which is Luter's newer venture to provide wellness-related educational tools to financial professionals, and the Certified Financial Planner, CFP, designation, which, as of 2022, includes the psychology of finance as a required component of coursework, she says. To further narrow your search, try the FTA directory of members. You can sort certified providers to help find someone of a particular background, like financial trauma or couples financial therapy, and also to see who may take insurance. Ultimately, if you're dealing with feelings of shame, guilt, and avoidance around any money issues, a financial therapist may be able to help you. Whether we like it or not, money touches so much of our everyday life, and that demands that we are able to have conversations about it, says Evans. This work is for anyone, no matter the state of your finances or net worth. The next article is titled, The 13 Most Common Misconceptions About GLP-1s Debunked. From rapid muscle loss to miserable side effects, an endocrinologist fact-checks the biggest concerns she hears from her patients. This article was written by Caroline Messer, MD, and originally published April 3, 2026. At least once a day in my New York City endocrinology practice, a patient asks me to debunk some myth about weight loss drugs that they saw on social media. I've prescribed the medications to thousands of patients who have benefited from significant weight loss and improved quality of life. But the growing popularity of GLP-1 drugs has also led to a host of mistaken beliefs about them. Some reflect perfectly reasonable concerns arising from my patients' actual experiences, while others are caused by irresponsible and misleading reports from unreliable sources. The good news is that the vast majority of GLP-1 side effects, to the extent patients experience them at all, are caused not by GLP-1 drugs themselves, but rather by rapid weight loss, regardless of how such weight loss is achieved. And there are very well-established ways to deal with these effects. Below are the most common misconceptions I hear from patients regarding GLP-1s. I'll separate the myths from the facts, explain the science, and tell you how to prevent or treat the negative side effects that some of my patients experience. Consider this your virtual consultation. Number one, I'll drop a lot of weight quickly and easily. It's a magic bullet. GLP drugs are highly effective, but they are not a magic bullet. They require ongoing commitment and produce gradual weight loss over many months. Yes, GLP-1 therapy ultimately leads to substantial weight loss, but the process is slower than 1 to 2 pounds per week on average, and success depends on continued use of the medication, combined with lifestyle modifications. In clinical trials, patients on tirzepatide, brand name Zepbound, lost an average of 15 to 21% of their body weight over 72 weeks, about 17 months. For someone starting at 220 pounds, this translates to roughly 0.5 to 0.7 pounds per week on average, considerably less than the 1 to 2 pounds per week I mentioned above. Also, the weight loss follows a predictable pattern: more rapid initial loss during the first 20 to 36 weeks, then gradual continued loss or maintenance. Also, keep in mind that all clinical trials combined injections with reduced calorie diets, typically 500 kcal per day deficits, and at least 150 minutes of physical activity per week. Number two, I'll have to stay on the drug for the rest of my life. If I stop, my weight and health risks will come back. Many people do regain weight after stopping GLP-1 therapy. In clinical trials, when people stopped the medication after achieving significant weight loss, most regained a substantial portion of their weight within a year, even while continuing diet and exercise. On average, people regained about two-thirds of the weight they had lost. Along with weight regain, many of the health improvements, blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, also reversed. However, not everyone regains all their weight. About 1 in 6 people in these studies successfully maintained most of their weight loss with lifestyle changes alone after stopping the medication. It is unclear why some people can maintain their weight loss and others cannot. It likely relates to individual differences in metabolism, genetics, and how well lifestyle changes are sustained. In general, it is important to have a multidisciplinary plan in place when stopping treatment. This may include psychology, psychiatry, dietitians, trainers, and endocrinology. Number three, the side effects are miserable. The most common side effects of GLP-1 drugs are gastrointestinal and include nausea, diarrhea, constipation, and vomiting. These result from the slowing of gastric emptying that typically occurs within the first 48 hours after starting the medication or after each dose increase. Most people find that these symptoms are mild to moderate and decrease significantly once they've been on a stable dose for a while. Here are the 5 things I tell my patients to do to reduce side effects. Eat smaller, more frequent meals throughout the day. Eat slowly and chew each bite thoroughly. Avoid high-fat, greasy, or fried foods. Limit alcohol and carbonated beverages. Stay well hydrated throughout the day. And here's how I tell them to treat side effects, which, again, typically subside within 2 to 3 days. For nausea, try eating bland foods. Consider ginger tea and avoid strong odors. If severe, consider a short-term anti-nausea medication like ondansetron. For constipation, increase fiber intake, drink plenty of water, and consider a fiber supplement or stool softener. For diarrhea, stay hydrated and eat binding foods like bananas, rice, and toast. For heartburn or dyspepsia, avoid trigger foods and consider an over-the-counter antacid like Tums or Mylanta. Number 4. I'll have to consume tons of protein to counteract the weight and muscle loss caused by these drugs. This is actually true. GLP-1s can cause rapid weight loss, and the body may break down muscle for energy during this process. Studies suggest that muscle loss with GLP-1 receptor agonists, RAs, accounts for 25% to 40% of the total weight lost. However, before tossing your remaining supply of Ozempic, please pay close attention to the following points. This substantial muscle loss can be largely attributed to the magnitude of weight loss, rather than to an independent effect of GLP-1 receptor agonists. Studies have shown that weight loss due to old-fashioned dieting results in muscle loss of 10 to 30%. Individuals with obesity have a higher muscle mass but poorer muscle quality. Therefore, the loss of muscle mass associated with GLP-1 receptor agonist treatment may actually be beneficial. This is because while there is clearly a loss of lean mass, there is an improvement in the quality of skeletal muscle. Since protein is the building block of muscle, patients should ensure adequate dietary protein to support muscle repair and growth. They should aim to include high-quality protein sources in each meal. Lean meats, poultry, fish, eggs, and dairy are excellent options, but plant-based proteins like nuts, seeds, and legumes can also contribute to daily intake. To support muscle retention and growth while on GLP-1s, patients should aim for approximately 1 gram of protein per day per pound of body weight. Number 5. I'll need to lift heavy weights every day to counteract muscle loss. Actually, daily heavy weight lifting is not advisable during GLP-1 therapy for weight reduction. The recommended approach is gradually introducing movement and then incorporating resistance training 2 or 3 times weekly for 30-minute sessions using bands, weights, or bodyweight exercises while maintaining 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic activity weekly. This cadence allows adequate recovery between sessions, which is critical for muscle protein synthesis and adaptation, building more protein, improving nerve connections, growing muscle fibers. In addition, daily heavy lifting without recovery increases injury risk and may impair adherence, particularly in older adults. So no, you don't need to go overboard with the barbells. A combination of resistance and aerobic training has been shown to preserve bone mineral density and improve muscle strength in individuals treated with GLP-1 RAs. Number 6. I won't enjoy food anymore. Most people on GLP-1s continue to enjoy food. Changes in taste perception and food preferences are common but often favorable. In a real-world study of 411 patients, 21% reported increased sweet taste perception, and 23% reported increased salty taste perception, while the heightened perception of sweetness specifically was also linked to decreased appetite and reduced food cravings. These taste changes appear to enhance rather than diminish satisfaction from smaller portions. On a more psychological level, the reduction in food noise allows food to stop being the enemy. This clearly allows patients to start enjoying food more rather than less. Some patients tell me they started to eat bread in moderation for the first time in years and are overjoyed. Number 7. I won't get to eat the foods I love anymore. Let's reframe this a bit. You might not crave your old favorite foods, but you might not miss them either. Studies show that patients on these medications tend to shift food choices toward less processed, more nutrient-dense foods. One small study found that GLP-1 RA users significantly increased purchases of unprocessed foods while decreasing ultra-processed food purchases compared to matched controls. However, this doesn't mean you have to eliminate your favorite foods entirely. In my practice, we focus on modifications in timing of meals, portion size, and food choices that minimize side effects rather than enforcing strict prohibitions. Number 8. I can't take the drug to lose just a few pounds. It's quote-unquote cheating. Technically, GLP-1 RAs should not be taken solely for the purpose of losing a few pounds, as their approved use is limited to individuals with obesity or people who are overweight with weight-related comorbidities. Having said that, microdosing allows patients to safely lose 5 to 10 pounds, generally with minimal side effects. Microdosing refers to taking lower than FDA-approved lowest dose, which can mean taking a fraction of the lowest dose or taking an FDA-approved dose at intervals greater than every seven days. I'm so frustrated by the cheating concept. Is it cheating to take a low-dose statin to lower cholesterol? Is it cheating to take a minimal dose of thyroid medication to correct a subclinical thyroid issue? As a culture, we need to remove the judgment and allow ourselves the grace to live our best lives using a safe and protective medication. Number 9. I can't take it just for my menopause belly. As anyone who is in menopause probably knows firsthand, this transition brings abdominal weight gain. As a result of decreased estrogen and other hormonal changes, fat tends to shift from the hips and thighs to the abdomen and around internal organs. This type of belly fat is particularly concerning because it increases the risk for heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and other health problems. GLP-1 RAs helped counteract the drop in estrogen by breaking down stored fat more effectively, using fat for energy instead of storing it, and reducing the production of new fat. Research shows that GLP-1 medications work through similar pathways as estrogen in the liver, brain, and fat tissue. This means they can help restore some of the metabolic balance lost during menopause. Number 10. I'll lose too much weight and be unhealthy and look gaunt. Not everyone taking GLP-1 RAs appears unhealthy or gaunt. While some individuals may experience visible fat and muscle loss, most patients achieve improved body composition and metabolic health. Lean mass loss compromises approximately 20 to 40% of total weight reduction in clinical trials, with higher percentages, up to 60%, observed when resistance training is not incorporated. However, the relative proportion of lean mass, as a percentage, is generally preserved. Adverse aesthetic outcomes, quote-unquote, Ozempic face, etc., are more likely in those with rapid, substantial weight loss, 14% or more of their body weight over 3 to 4 months. Older age, low protein intake due to reduced appetite, and sedentary lifestyles. When I do observe a patient getting too thin, I assess the issue. Does the patient simply need to lower the GLP-1 dose? Do I need to rope in my team of dietitians to increase dietary and supplemental protein? Or perhaps I need to discuss the case with a psychologist or psychiatrist if I sense disordered food thoughts. Number 11. They slow down your metabolism. I hear this one all the time, but GLP-1 drugs do not slow metabolism. In fact, trials repeatedly demonstrate that GLP-1 induced weight loss is not accompanied by a slowing of metabolism that is expected with typical calorie restriction. Why is this? GLP-1 receptor agonists activate brown fat, a special type of fat that burns calories to produce heat, and can convert regular white fat into beige fat, which also burns more energy. They also increase blood flow to muscles, which boosts muscle metabolism. Additionally, these medications improve how efficiently the body uses insulin and increase fat burning. Unlike traditional dieting, which often leads to significant metabolic adaptation, slowing of metabolism beyond what's expected for the weight lost, GLP-1 medications may help preserve metabolic rate relative to the amount of weight lost, potentially making it easier to maintain weight loss long-term. Number 12. These drugs are new, so there is no long-term safety data. GLP-1s are not new to the market. The first GLP-1 receptor agonist, exenatide, was approved by the FDA in 2005 for type 2 diabetes, so this drug class is over 20 years old. Accordingly, they've been studied for over 20 years. Number 13. People with a history of eating disorders shouldn't take GLP-1s. I can understand why patients might feel this way. Logically, it seems contradictory to offer a weight loss medication to someone who has struggled with restrictive eating. But on the contrary, and precisely because GLP-1 medications affect appetite in the brain, researchers have started asking an important question: could these medications help with disordered eating? Early research suggests they might in some cases, especially with binge eating disorders. People taking GLP-1 medications have reported fewer binge eating episodes, less emotional eating, and an easier time stopping when they feel full. These effects are not just about feeling less hungry. GLP-1 receptors are found in parts of the brain called the hypothalamic and mesolimbic systems that control both hunger and reward. In simple terms, these medications influence not only how much the body wants food, but also how strongly the brain craves it by suppressing dopamine signaling involved with reward circuits. Human studies are starting to reflect this. A large analysis published in JAMA Psychiatry found that people taking GLP-1 medications showed meaningful improvements in emotional eating and better control around food. Patients were less likely to eat because of emotions and more able to eat in a planned, intentional way. For people with binge eating disorder, small studies using medications like semaglutide and liraglutide have reported fewer binge episodes, fewer intense cravings, and overall improvement in symptoms. Many participants described food as feeling quieter or less consuming. When it comes to restrictive eating disorders like anorexia nervosa, the short answer is we really don't know much about how GLP-1 medications affect them. Most of the research so far has focused on binge eating and overeating, not on disorders where people already eat too little. Another important point is that no clinical trials have tested GLP-1 medications in people with anorexia nervosa or other restrictive eating disorders. Reviews of the research consistently note that there is little to no data in this area. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Allie Irving, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.
Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black hole.